We've been talking about drought for several years now. We've had redwood trees hanging around for a lot longer than that. And when you stop to do the math, you realize the giant redwoods that are so iconic of California's far north coast have seen drought quite a few times over the eons. At the moment, though, they're having some problems, problems big enough to be noticed by scientists like our next guest, Anthony Ambrose, who's a tree biologist at the University of California, Berkeley. And Anthony, I guess you've been studying redwoods for quite some time?
Yeah, probably about a little more than 18 years.
And over that time, just that period of time, which granted is just a blip for the redwoods in their particular history, have you noticed any particular changes yourself?
I think it's important that we distinguish when we're in this discussion between the coast redwoods and the giant sequoias.
Mm-hmm.
The coast redwoods, which are, of course, on the coast from the Big Sur coastline up just over the Oregon border, and then the giant sequoias, which are restricted to the west side of the Sierra Nevada in isolated groves. Over that time period that I've been studying both species, haven't really seen any major changes over that time period in either species until about last year. We started noticing some pretty unusual levels of foliage dieback in the giant sequoias and in the very southern part of the coast redwood range down kind of along the Big Sur coastline.
All right, so far south of the Bay Area then. So
yeah, yeah. The northern coast redwoods seem to be doing okay right now. You know, it's been cool enough and foggy enough, and they have enough water availability in the soil that they seem to be doing okay compared to what we've been, looking at them over the last several years. But the very southernmost redwoods seem to be pretty stressed and, you know, kind of south of the San Francisco Bay Area. And then, of course, the giant sequoias as well. They seem to be faring a little bit worse than the coast redwoods.
When you talk about the foliage dieback, what do you mean?
Well, you know, trees lose some of their leaves every year. It's a natural process, and that happens every year. But what has been observed, particularly in some parts of Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks in the giant sequoias, is pretty unusual levels in some of the trees where they're losing up to maybe half or more of their total leaf area, basically just turning yellow and then brown and then just kind of falling off by the end of the summer growing season, which has never really been observed or documented in the 125 years, for example, that Sequoia National Park has been in existence.
All right, so that's a fairly significant change. And let's talk in terms of water sources for the giant sequoias, because I know it's a little tricky to get up there into the national park, having been there myself. But, where does the water come from? I mean, is this a primarily snowpack-dependent species?
Yeah, that's what we think, is that the heavy snowpacks during the wintertime slowly melt, and that provides a recharge of water to the groundwater that the giant sequoia groves depend on for the summertime period. So these last several years, I mean, snow last winter was almost non-existent in some of the giant sequoia groves, and they really depend on that for the summer period.
I noticed some figures on how much water has to move throughout these trees during the course of a given day, and there were some quotes from you about that. Can you tell us just between the two species what the water needs are, or if they're pretty much the same between the two of them?
Well, we have directly measured, and we have really good estimates of how much water a really large giant sequoia tree might use. A typical summer day is between about 500 and 800 gallons of water for a really large tree, which is an enormous amount of water. We're still working up some numbers on the coast redwoods, but some of the really big coast redwoods we think have comparable water needs. It's really a function of how much leaf area they have, and these trees have millions or even billions of leaves within an individual tree that's losing water to the atmosphere, and that's a really large surface area to be losing water. So actually we think that the foliage dieback is kind of an adjustment mechanism that these trees have to the drought, where, you know, they're not getting enough soil water to supply how much water they're losing to the atmosphere, so they're shedding some of their foliage to minimize how much water they're losing.
We're talking about the giant redwoods and the giant sequoias as well. Anthony Ambrose is a tree biologist at UC Berkeley. You've already heard the distinction. The redwoods closer to us are doing reasonably well. At the southern end of their range, a little bit of a different story, and certainly a different story for the sequoias as well. Join us on the exchange with questions or comments about the issues with these trees. 800-838-3760 is the phone number anywhere in our region. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. When we talk about things like the redwood's ability to take in water or, you know, depending on fog, does that mean they're taking in some water not just through the ground but also through their leaves?
Yeah, that's correct. That's a really important subsidy of water during the dry summer season for the coast redwoods. We think it also might be important in the giant sequoias, but we're still examining that further. But water gets basically pulled out of the leaves from the dry atmosphere, and that pulls water up through the plant from the roots and the soil. And, you know, the coast redwoods are, you know, 380 feet tall is the tallest one. And that's a long way to have to pull water. So it's a really nice subsidy when the fog comes in and the redwoods have the water condense on their treetop foliage, and it just gets directly absorbed into the leaves. It's not a really large amount when you consider how much water they use on a daily basis, but it comes at a really critical time of year, and it also reduces how much water the trees are losing to the atmosphere because it cools things down and it makes the leaves wet, and so they're not evaporating as much.
Anthony, are you able to separate drought from climate change, or is that like asking you to separate heat from fire?
Yeah, you know, drought is a natural process, and California goes through cyclical periods of drought, long before humans arrived on the scene and started messing with the climate. But right now we are in it's a whole different framework. In my opinion, you can't really think about drought outside of a climate change context in this regard, because temperatures are really increasing, and that increases how much water is being lost to the atmosphere. And so even if, drought is not only a function of how much water is coming in, like through rain or snow, but how much water is being lost to the atmosphere. And as we continue to increase temperatures, the amount of drying that the atmosphere has continues to increase. And so that exacerbates drought in these areas, and the effect of drought during other times that otherwise the trees might not be stressed. That extra temperature and evaporative demand puts a little extra stress on them.
You can't get back to what the tree considers normal.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, there have been some studies. It's really hard to attribute any one, drought, similar to, like, hurricanes or storms. It's like, oh, is that caused by climate change or not? There was a recent study about a month ago that attributed about 8 to 27% of the severity of this current drought is due to anthropogenic climate change. They actually compared what the drought would have been with or without the climate warming that we've had in recent decades, and they estimate that the increased temperatures have made it that much more severe.
Let us take a call. We have John and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking redwoods and sequoias with Anthony Ambrose, tree biologist at UC Berkeley. Hi, John.
Hi. So I had a question for each type of tree. I'd heard that because they logged a lot of the larger redwoods, that the moisture that they used to transpire was part of what created the fog, which they then sieved out of the atmosphere, which fell, which they then transpired. And so I was wondering if the redwoods, like the Amazon forest, are somewhat, you know, self-sustaining in their water. And then on the giant sequoias, I know that some of the big old ponderosa pines at Lassen Park, they let the white firs get so thick because fire didn't occur that they used the water that then killed the ponderosas. So has the understory growth around the giant sequoias contributed to their fragility, should we say?
Okay, a couple of good questions there. Thanks, John.
Yeah, those are both excellent questions. Let me answer the first one about the coast redwoods. There is certainly some relationship between the logging that has occurred historically in the Coast Redwood Range. You know, up to 98% of the old-growth Coast Redwood Forest has been logged and been replaced by smaller, younger trees now. There's undoubtedly some effect on the hydrological cycle in terms of how much water they're losing to the atmosphere and how that contributes to atmospheric humidity and cloud and fog formation. My understanding is that the actual fog formation is more dependent on the kind of the ocean conditions and the sea surface temperatures of the ocean relative to the inland temperatures and the upwelling of the ocean currents, which is really what's creating the fog primarily and then getting conveyed on land. But there's certainly some effects from that hydrologic from the logging on the hydrologic cycle in the coast redwoods, without question. In terms of the giant sequoias, fire suppression has had a really big effect on the understory forest composition. There have been a lot more white firs and even pines and cedars that have grown in over the last 100 or 150 years since fire suppression has really started kicking in, and the densities in some particular giant sequoia groves have really increased, and those white firs and pines and cedars are definitely competing with the giant sequoias for limited soil water. Some places, like in Giant Forest in Sequoia National Park, they've been very aggressive about doing prescribed burning and reintroducing fire and thinning out the stand densities of some of those understory trees. So it's not as bad of a situation there, but some of the other groves, like on Sequoia National Monument, funds are limited for prescribed burning, and they haven't had the opportunity to reintroduce fire in some of those areas, and they've definitely increased, and that's probably contributing to some of the water stress that the giant sequoias are seeing in those areas.
Anthony Ambrose, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, tree biologist at the University of California, Berkeley. We're talking about redwoods and sequoias, and you can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. When you mentioned foliage die-off, are we talking actual entire trees, though?
Well, no, only in a handful of cases that we observed actual trees dying where they've lost 100% of their leaves and they're just sticks in the sky at this point. Those trees were predisposed to drought by some burning from prescribed fire where it burned the base of them a little bit. But for the most part, you know, the whole tree's not dying. They're just shedding a lot of their foliage that's more than normal. You know, it's definitely showing signs of stress, but you know, we don't want to be alarmist about this because these trees have dealt with pretty severe conditions. You know, these trees live for thousands of years, and they have dealt with droughts and extreme fires in the past, and there's evidence that they've, you know, died back and regrown their entire crowns before, so that they are remarkably tough and resistant trees to these types of events. You know, if conditions improve, if, you know, this El Nino brings a lot of rain, if not a lot of snow, then, you know, hopefully next year they might just regrow that foliage or over the next coming years. There's probably going to be some impact on their growth from these last several years. You know, that leaf area that they're shedding is obviously what's responsible for the photosynthesis and sequestration of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere that they use for their growth and reproduction. But, yeah.
The range of the redwoods used to be much greater, I gather. They used to be able to live in more places.
Well, millions of years ago, the ancestors of both the coast redwoods and giant sequoias used to be widely distributed throughout the northern hemisphere. But as geologic events happened and climate change over millennia happened, they have now been restricted to these small, isolated populations. You know, in the northern California and the Sierra Nevada mountains, their sister species, the dawn redwood, is now just restricted into the central part of China. So they're relic species at this point, just small distributions compared to what they historically covered.
And so here again, you're not terribly concerned because they have been tough guys that have survived eons of drought and stress, and so this could be a fairly easy rebound for them?
Potentially. You know, right now, they're definitely showing signs of stress, but like I said, they're tough. We're not so concerned that they're all going to die off right now, but what we are concerned about is as temperatures continue to increase globally and precipitation patterns change, as snowpacks continue to decline in the Sierra Nevada in particular, we don't know if there's going to be some tipping point or threshold beyond which maybe these trees won't be able to survive or be able to recover. In the past, they've dealt with events like this and been able to recover. But if conditions continue to get worse and we get a lot more frequent droughts or more severe droughts, and if conditions don't recover or allow the trees to recover after these types of events, then, you know, they might start to die back, or they might not grow as well, or the seedlings might not be able to get established and germinate, so the future trees in the forest might not be able to survive. So, you know, it's not quite cause for alarm right now, but it is kind of a preview for what these trees might be experiencing in the future. And so, you know, we're just trying to use this as an opportunity to learn, like, well, what does it take to cause this type of effect in the trees, and are they able to recover, and what does that tell us about the future?
All right, so stress is on the sequoias for sure in the western Sierra Nevada, and also on the coast redwoods, but way on the southern end of their range down by Big Sur. Anthony Ambrose is a tree biologist at the University of California, Berkeley, and knows a lot about sequoias and redwoods. Thank you for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.